Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 20th, 2005. This session, The Laws of Geology, Disregard Them at Your Peril. Presented by Don Coberly in the Fireside Room. Disc number COD-2005-02. Let's listen in.
We left yesterday talking about rocks. We're done talking about rocks. Until tomorrow, except for the part that we talked about today. In your packet, we've gone through and we finished yesterday with our quiz, essentially, on the concrete wall and our observations of it and the sediments that, I don't know if I told you these, I took this picture at Mount St. Helens a couple of weeks ago, so it sort of fits in with the angular fragments that we see and the big size range in fragments that we see being fairly high energy. Geologically speaking, Mount St. Helens was fairly high energy. Okay, it's a geology joke. I have a couple of these left if there's somebody who needs one. Okay. So now we're moving on, and the next sheet that you have in your packet, it starts with, for a moment, imagine that your task is to figure out the geology of an unknown area. And I would do this professionally, or not me so much, but other geologists might do this professionally.
You got any extra books? I do take.
Okay, here's one for you. If we were going to go do an exploration somewhere, if we thought there were some copper up in the mountains somewhere and we wanted to go try and find it, we'd have to go figure out the geology. The first thing that we would do would be get a base map. We have to figure out where in the world we are. And the U.S. Geological Survey has topographic maps. Is everybody familiar? Is there anybody who doesn't know what a topographic map is? Okay, shows the elevation and where you are and where how to get from here to there and things like that. So these are available for pretty much everywhere in the U.S. I assume the same as in Canada. So this would be the base map that we would use, and this is the one for this area. So down right here is Holden Village. There's Dr. Cliff. And here are the mountain peaks around. So that when we leave the village tomorrow and start on our hike, we see a rock outcrop. In step two, hike around, look at rocks, put rock outcrops on the map, write notes in the field book. The idea of a rock outcrop is that's the bedrock of the area. That's the stuff that when we come back next year or 2 years from now is still going to be there. Right? We can look at all these rocks that I handed out yesterday, but they don't tell us anything about the geology from right here because they're not from right here. So we have to go and find what we call bedrock in geology terms. If we would take the biggest fire hose anybody had ever seen and started up at the top of the valley and washed off all the loose stuff and got it all down to the bare rock, that's the bedrock. And that's what we care about most as geologists. And in the valley here, if we were doing a geologic map, we have terms for what this loose stuff is. We would mark that in our book and we'd put it on our map, but it's the bedrock, the stuff that's there that's still going to be there 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, that's the guts of the geology. So what we would do is we'd go on our hike tomorrow and we leave the village and we figure out where we are on the map and we find a rock outcrop and we put a little dot on our map and call it number one and put a one in our field book and we start observing. Is it igneous, metamorphic, or sedimentary? And we go through a lot of the processes that we went through yesterday and we'll amplify on today and write it in our book. And then we go hike some more and then we figure out where we find the next big piece of rock outcrop and put that dot on the map. And now we get to the end of the day or the end of the week and we have all these dots on the map and we have all our things in our notebook and we're figuring out, all right, what in the world's going on here? That's number three. Figure out the relationship in space of the rock units to one another. Let's think if we were hiking, we decided we were going to hike down the valley all the way to Lake Chelan. And we'd look on both sides of the creek. And for this first mile, all we saw on the ground was sandstone. And then we, all of a sudden, we're walking on shale. And then we walk another 2 or 3 miles, and all of a sudden, we're back in sandstone. And what I would see that as being would be these horizontally laid down layers that we're walking down as the valley gets lower. Make sense? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, what would happen if we're walking on this side of the creek, and everywhere for the next 5 miles, it's all sandstone, and yet our buddies, we're going to split into two groups so we can work twice as fast, and some of us are going to walk on this side of the creek, and the other of us are going to walk on the other side of the creek, and we're going to meet 5 miles down and have a beer, which is what geologists do when they're talking about stuff like this. Cold. Mostly what they do is have a beer. Whether the geology comes up or not is really irrelevant. And so I'm going to say, well, our gang, we're walking down, we're going sandstone, 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 for the next 5 miles. And Dr. Cliff and his team are on the other side, and they come back, well, it's all shale on our side. We're going to say, you guys started drinking the beer up at the village. And they'll say, no, and we look, and you know, we trust them. And so it's all sandstone on one side, and it's all shale on the other side. We got to figure out, how does that all fit together? And the first thing that would come to my mind would be, well, there's a fault. And that's a plane of weakness, and so the creek is running down the fault, and that explains why we see the two different... So that's the next step that we have to go through after we find these rocks and we identify them, is now how does it all fit together? And that's where, and in a minute, that's how we do that. The rules that we use are what we're going to talk about today. We talked about step number three, figure out the relationship. 4, finish the geologic map. So that topographic map as a base map now gets the bedrock geology units put on it. And this is a map that has been done by geologists at the U.S. Geological Survey that shows their interpretation of what the bedrock geology is all around here. This is if you blew all that stuff off and could look right at the rock. This is if we would hike someplace to right here, we could look and say, oh, we're in granodiorite right now, which is in intrusive igneous rock. So we turned that topographic map into a geologic map. 5, we describe the geologic history of the area. We look at the way the rock units are. We figure out what the ages of them are through getting age dates. And then we put together the story of, okay, 200 million years ago, this is what was going on this piece of the planet, and then 50 million years ago, something changed. And what I have written down in 6 is, get paid, get your degree, or open your mind. If you're doing this kind of work professionally, that's when you get paid. If you're doing this scholastically, that's when you get your degree. And if you're doing this surreptitiously, that's when you open your mind and don't tell anybody else about it. In order to complete task 3, you need to get to task 3, figure everything out before you get paid, right? Yeah. If you can not do it that way, then that'd probably be better. But in this case, to get to 6 and get paid or get your degree, you have to figure out 3. And the way that we do that is with what I call the laws of geology. And as the thing up on the board says, we call these the laws of geology just to make them sound important. They're not that way at all. On the next page, I have the laws of geology. And there's kind of a color code. I hope no one's colorblind and can differentiate these. The black is the law itself. Laws are in black and white. The next thing that I printed in red is sort of a, general version of what that law states. And then for some of those, I have some stuff written in blue that is sort of the next step that we need to think about. So what I want to do is go through each of these. And again, I think of these sort of being the rules of grammar of the science or the language of geology. We have some kind of rock over here, and we have some kind of rock over here, and we have some kind of rock over here. How do they all interrelate, and how can we have to make some common sense as to how that might happen? And that's where these laws and these rules help us. The first one is the principle of uniformitarianism. And this is sort of the founding principle of the science of geology. which says the present is the key to the past. And the point there is the things we see happening on the planet right now, volcanoes erupting, Mount St. Helens-ish volcanoes erupt, Hawaiian volcanoes erupt, they're different than each other, but we believe that those things have gone on into the deep past. I believe the data show that the Earth is 4.6 billion years old. It's really, 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 really old. For at least the last 4 billion years, or a very, 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 very long time, these principles have applied. By the same token, we believe gravity has always worked the way it does now. Rocks have always fallen downhill. Streams have flowed over again this last probably 4 billion years, something like that. Glaciers have carved what they've done what they did. 200 million years ago, there were a lot of glaciers around. We believe it's a good assumption, that the way we see glaciers acting today is probably the way they acted 200 million years ago. There's no reason to come up with new radical things about things were different in the past. Rock used to fall up, rain used to go sideways all the time. We don't need to do anything like that. So, and I have a series of overheads here that match up with the handouts that you have, mostly. And here is the first one of those. And the point is, here is a picture that was taken 10 years ago in Bolivia at mud pots that are bubbling up near hot springs. Here is a rock that has been age dated to 3.6 billion years, 3.5 billion years in South Africa. This concentric circle pattern that we see, that some people would think might be pretty or artistic, I think of as being utility, is the same over here. Therefore, we make the assumption that this thing that we see today probably happened in South Africa at that point in the past. Simple. Principle of uniformitarianism, present is the key to the past. That's the sort of general principle that helps guide us through geology. The next thing I have is the law of original horizontality. That was written by somebody who was trying to get a master's out of it. What it means is rocks get laid down flat. Okay? Now, in the precise definition, to think about this a little more precisely or more thoroughly, 70% of the rocks that we see are sedimentary rocks. Those things fall and settle under the force of gravity. Gravity is downward, things get laid down flat. It doesn't apply so much to intrusive rocks, so that when you go down to Yosemite and you see these big domes, it doesn't apply there. When you see Hawaiian volcanoes, you see this stuff come up and it runs out, and when you look at the cross-section of a Hawaiian volcano, even though it's a mile high, it's 50 miles across, and still those rock units are fairly flat. So it applies predominantly to sedimentary rocks, but that's the thing we see most often. That thing by itself is, I suppose, a little bit helpful, but not really. The point is, if you see rocks and they're not flat, we make the assumption that they weren't laid down that way. That next picture in your... If I got that back, I think I do. In your package, here we have a series of beds that are all tilted, right? By looking at them, I believe that they're sedimentary rocks. They were laid down flat, and here is probably sandier material, the lighter stuff, and then you have shalier or finer grain material that was laid down. My assumption is these things were originally laid down like that. The other alternative is somehow that these things were laid down and one grain of sand fell right here and one grain of silt fell right here and there's silt, sand, and right? It doesn't make any sense, or it makes less sense. So the point is, when we see this, and this is the way this is out in the field, we have to come up with step two of how it got that way. Step one is it got laid down flat, and step two is it got tilted up on its side. Okay? The law of superposition states that the older rocks are on the bottom. I think this makes sense, again, common sense, that if you have a package of rocks, stuff gets deposited, and then more stuff gets deposited on top of it, and more stuff gets deposited on top of it. The other alternative there is that somehow here's a layer of rock, here's another layer of rock, here's another we're going to call these 1, 2, 3, and 4, 1 being old and 4 being young. This is probably the oldest one because the stuff fell and it formed this layer, and then later more stuff came down and formed this layer. The other alternative is somehow this layer got laid in, and then this layer got laid in, and then this layer got laid in, and somehow this layer got snuck in. Okay, it makes less sense. Then again, this relates, mostly to sedimentary rocks. Sometimes what we will see with igneous rocks is there will be stuff that will be injected in later and kind of wedged in this little zone between these two. But again, that's something that we'll keep in mind as we're out in the field going, oh, if here's a sediment, and here's an igneous layer, now it doesn't necessarily fit the pattern. But if we see a layer of sandstone, and then shale, and then sandstone, and then shale, we'll assume that this is the oldest, next oldest, and youngest, rather than somehow a bunch of sandstone got jammed in there. Make sense? The way that this idea gets goofed up is, I'm reading a geology book back there. Imagine that somehow these layers get pushed on from the side and folded like this. And so here, if now, here's old, and here's young, and the world's the way we think it should be. When we come to right here, and here's old, and here's young, and then all of a sudden some of this got eroded away, and we were right here, we said, well, wait a minute, we got old stuff on top of young stuff. Right? And a reasonable question would be, well, okay, fine, maybe that happens, but it can't be very common. How far do you have to go from right here to find this occurrence? And the answer to that is about half a mine. The Holden mine was mined out of a set of beds precisely this way, so that the Holden mine ore body dips this way. The two ways that it can get to that angle are to be raised up to this far, or raised up all the way through 90 degrees and overturned is the geology term that we use. So in that case, now the law of superposition no longer holds. So how do we now, what do? We, you heard that? In the law of superposition, as it's without the confounding issues, here's, if we had a bunch of layers of rock, or in this case I would think like lava flows, we would think the oldest lava flows would be on the bottom, and the younger one, they would get younger as you would get closer to the top. And so I thought, well, what if I burned it? Here would be a problem. Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries, I used to listen to on the radio, and somehow there's a, you know, somebody got murdered, but they got, the last thing they did was light the yellow candle, and I don't know how this all turns out, but there's some order here, which candle was burned first. And we can, using the law of superposition, we can say, well, whichever one was on the bottom. And if we find something younger on top of it, or something that lays on top of it physically, we'll guess that that was burned later. And so here are three different colored candles, black, yellow, and red. And so what's the order? Well, in this case, I'm going to guess red was last. I'm going to take advantage of all the clues I've been given. The fact that the red candle is still there. Let's you know, when they give us the easy stuff, let's take advantage of it. Now, I could have tried to have been sneaky and snuck that in, burned it first and then put it back on top, but I wouldn't do that. Cliff might. What I see right here is we've got the red stuff laying on top of the dark stuff, right? So at least I have red. I still believe that the red is the youngest thing. I think right here in particular, this kind of solves it for me. I think this is some of that yellow wax sitting, you know, spot on top of the black stuff. So is there, and then you kind of think of it the other way around to see if you can confirm it. Is there any place here where we see a string of yellow kind of running over the red that would cause us to believe differently? And I don't really see that. So my suggestion for this would be the black or the dark green candle was burned first, and then the yellow one, and then the red one. Make sense?
Yep.
It's totally analogous, I believe, to if you were in Hawaii doing an elder hostel there, and you got a geologist who said, hey, let's go figure out which of these lava flows is the oldest. You would find some characteristic of each flow that you thought was determinative, like once, if it's got a lot of extra iron in it, it might be red. Might be oxidizing, it might be rusting. So, oh, here's this red one, we can follow it. And another one has more gas bubbles in it. So you can figure out, and then you go out in the field and you say, well, which one's on the bottom, which one's on the top? And, we can, and then if you were going to be serious about it, you'd take samples of them and send them to the lab and get the age dates back, and you'd prove that you were right. You didn't need to go through all of that lab space. Okay. Now, in sedimentary rocks, we would assume the same thing. We have some clues that can help tell us what I said in that blue part. This applies on your laws of geology, law of superposition, older rocks are on the bottom. This applies to rocks that have not been overturned. We need to ask the question, which way is up? These rocks, to skip back a couple of pages and look at this real briefly again, just looking at this, especially if you're driving by on the highway and don't stop, you have no, I don't think you have a good way of knowing whether these rocks were brought up like this or whether these rocks were brought up to that position. That next set of, the next page on your handouts gives you a criteria for determining the top and bottom of beds. Because once you can determine what the top of a bed is, now you know what which way is up, right? The top of the bed is at the top, so that means it's the youngest part of the bed, and so now you can establish which is younger and which is older. The first way to do that is to trace, get a series or a section where you know what's going on and get it established in your mind as if we were walking down the valley and we got our thing established, you know, our sequence established up here, and then we started walking down the valley and we could see into the creek had cut down, and all of a sudden things aren't the way we thought they were, right? Now what used to be the sandstone was always on the bottom, now the sandstone's on top. What's happened? Well, we trace back and we try to figure out whether we try to make sure we see that being continuous, and if lo and behold now it's the other way around, we know the world's gotten overturned over that little part of it. And there's an example of that shows kind of a cross section of the Alps, and these units are sort of each has a little bit of a distinctive pattern, so that if we next time we do this elder hostel, let's do it in the owls. We can talk much more about French medicine there. And then go do geology here, and then Kristen can show us how to watercolor the owls. I'm all for that. And so there are certain rock units, and you could trace these along. Here's one in particular where you could walk along this, and all of a sudden it gets overturned right in this little area. But because you have this record of where it is normally, you can now keep track of it, the fact that it's gotten overturned.
Show that one again.
Say again.
Show me where it's overturned.
It's kind of hard to see right in here on this right-handmost mountain. There's a little fold here that goes over the top a little bit. So if you would, and then turns back around and gets into normal sequence. So right in this position, it would be overturned. And we can look at that at a coffee or a table having a cup of coffee. How about that? The next thing to talk about, we're not going to go through every bloody one of these because we'll be here all day. The next one talks about scouring or channeling. This seems, I think we all realize or we all understand this, that if there's a series of beds that have been laid down and then a stream runs across it, the stream will start to erode that material out, right? And you'll get a little divot. And if for some reason that stream then moves away, there's a boulder blocks it up, now more material will fill in. And so you'll get these stream cuts. The other way, I have a note here, if we're thinking, what are all the possibilities, turn it over and see if it makes more sense that way. And if you take this piece and turn it over, now you have these little humps out in the world. We don't see those very often, do we? I mean, the whole point of erosion is it takes the high points and tries to make them into low points. So to take a real world example of that, here is a wall of a quarry down in Florida, and we see this big divot right here, and it looks like it's filled in with different material, and so we're gonna evaluate, do we think this section is right side up or upside down? This sort of meets our idea of what we think a stream channel should be. If we flip it over and somehow this whole thing has gotten overturned, now we have this lump out there, and that just doesn't make much sense. Now, last year when I raised this issue, somebody said, well, what if that lump were really hard? What if it had been somehow solidified by, I don't know whether you thought it might be an anthill or something like that, but that would be one thing to go and check. I mean, we make our first guess as this is the right way up, but we might want to go look at that, and if it's real silty material, that's what we'd anticipate from being brought by a stream. But if for some reason this thing was just hard as heck, then maybe we'd have to reevaluate. Okay. One of the other ideas that they talk about in this, and this is from the AGI, is the American Geological Institute, and they have a book that is in a little notebook that if you're going to get absurdly serious about geology, has all kinds of little tips and tricks and things to know in it. And that's where I pulled this out of. One of the things that we'll forget about conglomerates. We talked yesterday about a conglomerate being a sediment that has some fairly big chunks in it. If you see this conglomerate overlaying something else, and there's pieces of the lower stuff in the upper stuff. Again, doesn't it make sense that that conglomerate is younger? The other way, if you try to make it older, is here's these lumps of stuff that were in this conglomerate that suddenly show up as a entirely new unit. It makes less sense. Graded bedding. When we talk about graded bedding, we see this in sediments sometimes. If you have a layer of certain size particles, and then you look up higher in the unit, are the particle sizes always the same as you go up? Do they get bigger or do they get smaller? Here's a picture, a real world picture. Again, taken from Mount St. Helens a couple of weeks ago. And looking at sort of the bottom of the yellow, where the yellowish-orange fragments are, and moving upwards, what I see is here is this sort of zone that has fairly similar sized fragments in it. There is some range in variability from this one, you know, but everything's within about half the size to twice the size. And then as you move up further, you get some smaller fragments in here. There's one big one that's left. And now it gets even smaller to the place where we can't even see the
This is the other way up in our book. Is that significant? No, never mind.
Okay. It's possible since I put these together at 11:45 one night. I made a mistake. My assumption would be, or I would conclude, that then this section is the right side up. And in this case, my rationale is this material was all exploded out of Mount St. Helens. And so you have this explosion that explodes everything up into the air. What stuff falls out first?
Heaviest.
The biggest. Well, yeah, the heaviest stuff. That's the thing that really matters. And in this case, with it all probably being the same density, it's going to be the bigger pieces. And so we had the biggest pieces fall out, and then smaller and smaller grains fall. Same thing, Stokes' law in fluids. You drop a small pebble, it takes longer to get to the bottom of the jar than the big pebble does. So if we saw this as part of a larger section, we would say, which way's up? I know which way is up. That takes us back to, the older stuff must be on the bottom and the younger stuff must be on the top. Okay? That's the law of superposition. Again, there are a number, there's a second page of that AGI sheet that I don't have any examples for, but things that I think are fairly common for people, you know, that you would know even not being geologists, this idea of mud tracks. If we're hiking up the road on Friday and we come across a little puddle or a little divot in the blacktop where the sediment has settled out, and now it's sunny outside, so all the water's dried off and the mud cracks. The mud cracks and the little fragments kind of have curled up edges, right? Well, if we look at that, same thing happens in geology all the time. Tidal pools, and they dry up, and now you dump more stuff on top of them, and you're left with these little things. And now we come back a billion years or 500 million years later, and we find them. And this is the kind of thing that we see, right? Again, present is the key to the past. The other way to sort of double check that is to turn this thing upside down and say, here we have this sediment that's got these little muffin tops in it. Does that make more sense than this other way around? And my argument would be, no, it doesn't. So I'll go with this as being younger. Same thing with ripple marks. Everybody who's ever been to the beach or seen a stream come out knows what ripple marks are. And that concave surface, generally the sharp point points up. Flip it upside down if you want to look at it that way and go, tell me where you've been where you see these little lumpy hillocks next to each other. If a stream saw this, it'd try to get rid of those in a heartbeat. So again, ripples this way up, so that if we would go and see something out in the field and we'd see this set of ripples, we'd go, all right, the package is right side up. Older at the bottom, younger at the top. Everybody with me? That should frighten you. I have 1 minute left in this part of the session, and we'll talk about in my field camp that I did back in 1981. Down in the southern Indian Mountains, we were mapping, and we're mapping a couple of distinct units. One that we called KQM. K is for Cretaceous Age. And QM is for the rock term quartz monzonite, which is an intrusive igneous rock. And it's jargon, like doctors use, that by saying quartz monzonite, other geologists go, oh, I know what that means as far as how much aluminum is in it and how much silica is in it and how much iron is or manganese in it. And it's irrelevant to 99.9% of the population. There was another unit here we called KG, K again for Cretaceous, that same age, and G for granite, which people pretty much have an idea of what that is. Again, an intrusive igneous rock. And when you come back from break in 10 minutes, I'll tell you the rest of the story.
Well, I'll look it up in the
But they're like, they're little mounds that you show. They're acres and acres and acres of mud. We can't fit the mines.
See the same thing in upstate New York? The same thing in parts of Wisconsin? What's the same about all those areas?
Education. Well, that's what
so that's, and again, yeah, that would be.
But it's a very strange kind of formation. It's beautiful in the spring when the wildflowers.
I'll bet.
Do you live in Washington?
Live in Oregon. Oh, well, I look it up and learn some new stuff. What do you need? It's right here. Other way around, it sort of grades, it goes bigger.
They did appear. It gives a little of that group and building that's this museum.
Yeah.
They were bringing that.
Yep, that's true. And they're I'm mapping on the property next to you, but I can tell you how many years long I need to see this.
I remember he said,
so anyway, you know,
we were on a road, but it's only and he said, don't ever go on that road. He said, don't ever go on that park on that one. Wait until you get it turned out to your square. We can joke with them. We went to a bakery and we were joking with them in there. She won her old film and I went off at the store and I looked all around. I couldn't find the guy.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Tomorrow's about spirituality. Field book at that time. Here's this pit that was cut into. There were two big bodies of rock sort of sitting next to each other with a little saddle between them. And someone who had been there before doing geology field camp had somehow arranged to have a backhoe come in right where the two came together and dig out this pit that we could then go look in. So that's this is my really. Marion's not here, good. This is my really bad artistic rendition of this pit. And so we had this one rock type, and then there was this big linear feature that cut through it into two walls. So this is the side wall and this is the back. So kind of in this wall like this, and in the back kind of like this. And when we got down in there and looked at it, here's the things that I wrote down. Dike is a geologic term for a flat, sort of tabular igneous body. Cuts through the main body of rock type KQM, so two different rock types. A chill zone is present in the dike. The dike is this skinny thing right here. A chill zone, let's go back to yesterday, and crystal sizes versus temperature. If this thing were injected and it were hot and it split apart on a fracture, this cooler rock, this thing would cool more rapidly on the edges than it would at the middle, right? It's in contact with cold rock rather than being in contact with more of the hot stuff. If that were the case, what would we expect the crystal size to be? It'd be smaller. In fact, and what we call that is a chill zone, because the edges of this thing would have been chilled by the surrounding cooler rock. Faster cooling equals finer grain. I knew that law all 21 years ago. So a bake zone is apparent in the surrounding wall rock. By the same token, this cold rock here had, we think, this hot stuff injected into it, so it might have heated up a little bit right along those edges. And that extra energy being added to the rock would have caused the original rock to reorient a little bit, and whatever the manganese atoms or whatever it happened to be in there that was causing that rock to be darker sort of filtered and reorganized into perhaps bigger crystals that were more now visible and gave a darker appearance to this very edge. And then the last thing, a xenolith, which is again geology term for inclusion of the KQM, is present. So inside this stuff, inside the KG, we found this inclusion of KQM, and that kind of seals the deal for me, as the KG being the younger stuff and the KQM being older. This is included, the stuff that's included is the older stuff, the stuff that includes is the younger stuff. The other, let's look at it this oppositely, and say somehow we had this KG here first, and all of a sudden had two pieces of rock, one on the bottom of it, one on the top of it, and somehow some of it got inside it. That's a harder sell to me. And then somehow there's some little fracture in this that you could wedge a bunch of this KQM material into. But again, the simplest explanation is better. So I like the idea of the KQM being older and the KG being younger, and as this stuff came in along this fracture, I assume that that's what happened. It was hot, and it was probably traveling fairly fast, and now you can rip a piece of that wall rock off pretty easily. Make sense? It's the law of inclusions. The last law that I want to talk about is called the law of cross-cutting relationships, and the best way I can think to, or the way that I've got stuck in my head to show this, is I decided 3 or 4 years ago that with Marion as my muse, I would start to get more into my artistic self. And I do these drawings, and I do these every year, and it's kind of freeform and everything like that. So the point is, I just kind of make this up as I go along, and it's multimedia too, so. And I've graduated in the last 2 years to the sharp scissors, so that I'm feeling better about that too.
But you're flunking the tape test.
I'd appreciate you getting that.
This is a tough one. I'm gonna.
I'm
gonna have to give it to Bert.
I like color. And
we've got two flunkies.
Oops. could somebody come up and help me for just a second by holding this piece of paper up? Because, you know, I'm I may sound like I'm one of those, you know, whiny artists, but you know, this is hard. It's not as easy as I'm saying. And there, you know, it's not like
we're
we have a bloody day.
Oh, wait. We got a winner.
How many geologists have detected
to a multimedia show?
Vernon.
Fewer than 18 doctors.
Fewer than
12. I'll tell you.
So what I'm going to check. Oh, you're doing fine. Well, this could be dangerous. But only for you. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, I don't, you know, here's a whole other roll of tape. Yeah, this is the right side of the brain. And so, my point is, I'm so proud of this that I'm going to put it in the safe that they have here at Holden and keep it there. And 10 years from now, when all of us are back here together and I'm doing the same stupid stuff, well, I'll go get it out of the safe and show it, and everybody will go, man. That's really bad, Don. But it was 10 years ago. How the heck did you do that? And I would look at this and I'd say, well, I did the red line first, and then the green tape, and then the masking tape, and then I cut it, and then thought I didn't like that so much, so I taped it back together. And some of you will go, amazing, you're a psychic, is it magic? And I'll say, no, I'm a geologist and I know the law of cross-cutting relationships. The first thing that I did was the red line. The next thing that I did was the green tape. The green tape cuts the red line. Therefore, it happened after the red line. The masking tape covers over or cuts both the green tape and the red line, so it was younger yet. And all of those, the red line, the masking tape, and the green tape were cut by the cut itself, and I taped it back sloppy just so that we could all see that. So we can order these things sequentially by knowing the law of cross-cutting relationships. Younger things, younger events, in this case, if we think of the green tape as being an event, that's from the artistic, it probably was, but for no other reason. And the masking tape was a later event than the green tape, so it cuts the green tape. So that's the law of cross-cutting relationships in the right brain world. Now we go to the geologic world, and we can now use all of these four laws: original horizontality, superposition, law of inclusions, and the law of cross-cutting relationships, to move on to this idea of relative age dating. And by relative age dating, I mean what things are younger, what things are older, what thing happened first, second, third, fourth, and fifth, something like that. At this point, we're not saying something happened 2 billion years ago, and then something happened 500 million years ago, and then something 100 million years ago. And if you'll move on in your packet, you will see I have pulled out a few pages of a basic geology textbook that talk about this idea of relative age dating. And so if we would be out in the field, and we're going to start very simplistically and then get a little more complicated. If we came across these three units in the field, first let's look at them in their unfaulted condition. We would assume from the law of original horizontality that they were still in their normal position. From the law of superposition, we would think the stuff on the bottom was the oldest, layers 1, 2, and 3. And then because all three layers, 1, 2, and 3, are cut by the fault must be younger than whatever age we assign to that unit 3. Make sense? If we see this, we're out hiking around and we see this second block diagram, it's the same thing, only here we have this unit 4 that isn't cut by the fault. Therefore, we think unit 4 is younger than the fault. Again, this is relative one to another. What's the oldest thing we can see? What's the youngest thing we can see? How do they fit to each other? No specific ages associated with them. The next page that you have is, and I think you've got another page in there that we're not going to work through. It's just sort of building up from the simple cases to the more complicated cases. Let's look. In the end, what we really see out in the field is this bottom right-hand corner block, and now we kind of have to work back to figure out how did it get to be that way. In this case, that's provided for us. Here we have a number of units under block A, a number of units 1 through 7 that were apparently laid down horizontally. The second event that we see is somehow it was tipped up on its side. It was then planed down flat, and then more material was laid down, units 8 and 9 in that bottom right block, and that unit 8 appears to have some pebbles of some of the other, you know, or you know, no scale here, even cobbles or boulders of the other stuff in it. Those things we can consider to be inclusions, right? There's no, it's the same concept. So that unit 8 has to be younger than any of these others of which it includes material by the same Beyer law of inclusions. Anything confusing about that at all? And from there, and on the bottom of this next of that page, and then I think you have one more page in your handouts where there are just a number of other more complicated. You know, we've done the crossword puzzle with all the three-letter words in it. Now we've got a crossword puzzle with five-letter words in it. And if you guys want to work on, go ahead.
Down in the last diagram, is the intrusion there younger than 8 and 9 on top of it? I'm sorry. This one
right here.
Yeah.
Intrusion. I don't see.
I think
of these of all being sedimentary units. And then these pebbles that are in that are probably what was swept up off of this surface in block C when this stuff was laid down.
And so it all got an intrusion.
No, it all got incorporated in. Okay. The next thing that you have there, and oh, there's that other page. And again, now that this figure 6.4 talks about igneous things and how those interrelate, the stuff we've done so far is mostly sedimentary units laid down flat, blah, blah, blah. Now we add some igneous stuff into it. We have baked zones and chilled margins, and again, this gets a little more complicated, and you can do this on your own and want to talk to me about it. We can figure it out together. The value in the geology world that we get from having igneous rocks within our sedimentary rocks is the igneous rocks are easier to age date. And so now we can get, rather than just having these relative older, younger, 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 you can have, if you find an igneous rock, you can say, oh, that's 35.2 million years old. So now we can start putting some constraints on how old is old. That's how the igneous rocks help us. But again, feel free to, if you don't have anything else to do while you're here and want to figure out these puzzles. And I see geology as doing puzzles. If you like doing puzzles when you were little, you might still like geology. If you didn't, then you're in Marion's class. The last thing I want to talk about in the overheads is this last thing that I have called the meaning of unconformity. I think you have a few more pages in your handout sheet. All that is the same stuff we've just talked about published by a different textbook author. Sometimes people say things one way and I don't get them, and I read them someplace else and I go, oh, that's what they're... So all that is for if you may want to do this in the future. Same stuff, different voice. The last thing I want to talk about in the overheads is this idea of the meaning of an unconformity. And there's the picture to look at is this picture on page 33 up in the corner. And here's this like brooding geologist standing on a bunch of rocks. And I suppose if I ever went to Sickert Point in Scotland, I would try to put on a coat and get a rock hammer and take the same photo, because this is sort of the birthplace of modern geology. And James Hutton, the father of modern geology, was out, he was a gentleman farmer, had too much time on his hands, went out looking at rocks, and came to this point. And at that time, the world was 6,000 years old, right? It says so in the Bible, time's up, pencil's down. End of story. He got to this point and spent a lot of time sitting there and thinking about things and had one of those epiphanies or eureka moments in science and went, wait a minute, I can see here in the bay as these streams provide silt out into the bay. And I know what that stuff is like, and well, here's some of that stuff right here. And I don't see a new layer of that being laid down every day. Here's all these layers that law of original horizontality, he figured were laid down horizontally originally. Here's scads of this stuff. Here's this kind of break here where the rock units change, and a whole bunch more of that stuff. And he said, holy cow, how many, let's think about this. What had to happen for James Hutton to be able to see this? And we can think of how many geologic events there were. One was a whole bunch of layers got laid down a sediment. Second thing that happened is they got turned up on end. The third thing that happened is, maybe, maybe not yet, they got planed off somehow. The fourth thing that happened is more stuff got laid down. Well, no, we had to have two, this had to be turned twice, because stuff got laid down flat, got turned up at a certain angle, got planed off, it was flat at the top, more stuff got laid down, and it got turned up more, so that now this stuff is, if this is right side up, this stuff got turned up more than this, right? And this surface right here that geologists call an unconformity, we have no idea how long that time of non-deposition was. If you go to the Grand Canyon, you have rocks down at the bottom, and then you have a little sliver, and then you have a whole bunch more rocks on top, right? There's more time in the little sliver where nothing was happening than there is in all the rocks that were deposited there. Simply because of the oldest rocks are 2 billion years old, and then there's a break there of, I forget what it is, a billion years that's represented by space. There's nothing there. So Hutton's point was, layer after layer after layer after layer after layer, 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 that's this stuff. It gets tilted up, it gets pushed up to where it can get eroded. More stuff comes in on now, it gets submerged somehow so that now we can lay more material down on top of it. That stuff gets tilted even some more, and now the whole package gets picked up into the air to where I can stand on it in my rooting pose. He said, 6,000 years doesn't really seem to cut it for me. And that was sort of that is the birthplace of modern geology. And so that rivals Isaac Newton sitting under a bloody tree and finally, you know, having an apple hit him in the head. What did he have to do there? He's bloody sitting there. So this guy did do some thinking. So this is the birthplace of modern geology at Sickert Point in Scotland. And that eureka moment is the birth of the science that I study now, and I'm one of the intellectual leaps that we as humankind have made since we fell out of the trees. I have a picture somewhat closer to us. This is a road cut, and you have a much clearer photo of it than I have here, along I-70 up in Colorado. Vail is that way, Glenwood Springs I think is that way. We're between Glenwood Springs and Rifle. And here we see a set of dipping beds. And on top of them, some other unit that I think is probably some kind of landslide that has come down the hill and covered that. So again, we have, how many geologic events do we have here? We have the deposition of all of these, and there's nothing we can tell from here to know whether this stuff came this way or came that way. No way we can tell that from here. So let's take the easier solution. Got laid down, got tipped up, got jammed up into the air, got eroded off, and now there's some landslide that's come down on top of it. And that surface, we don't know how long that took. So again, there are at least four or five geologic operations that have happened here, and that takes a little while to do. If someone could pull the top, or there's a lens cap on that projector right there.
Way up there.
Way up there. If some tall person would pull that off. We'll look at just a random smattering of geology things and make up stuff as we go along. This is a rock that I found in Indonesia. The point here is when you look at the fragments in it, here's one here, there's one here that's kind of hard to tell because of the color contrast isn't that big. What we would look at, there are lots of different rock types here, we're doing the quiz again. Angular versus rounded, big sizes versus small sizes, what are the rock types in there? Mostly, to me it's kind of half angular and half rounded, and I'm surprised by that because I think what this rock is was a big volcanic flow that was still partly gaseous, and what it did was rip up as it was going along the ground all these pieces and include them. These inclusions are all older, we would know that, and if we could look at these a little better, we could start finding out what the rock types are. And maybe if we had a geologic map of Indonesia, we could go back and sort of trace where did this rock come from by what little zones it ran over. We have dark fragments here of, I think what they are is limestone in kind of finer and lighter matrix. I'm a little confused by this because I see both rounded and fairly angular fragments in there, and I can't really tell you what I think, how that happened. It might be some sort of submarine landslide that busted some things up, or some how you get both the angular and the rounded stuff in there, I don't know. So I'm, whoever figures that out can tell me tomorrow, but not while we're being recorded.
Don, I thought that limestone was whitish.
It depends. There isn't a hard, fast rule there. Limestone that I've seen is generally pretty gray. Which way is up? The concaves, we could go, if we were going to do this out in the field, we'd go look at our notes. And again, the sort of the curved surfaces that I see in here are, I think of that as being concave up. The cup part is up rather than the shedding part, the bowl part. So I think this package is right side up just the way it is.
Do you feel that that could be the concave?
In this case, I don't know whether that was, it could be a stream that was coming this way or going that way, or it might have been just the impact of the wind or the air. Again, this is Mount St. Helens, and near volcanoes, during volcanic eruptions, weird things happen. All right, here's another non-geology idea or non-geologic interpretation of the law of cross-cutting relationships. One day I was out doing work, and the first thing I think we did was drive this tractor across this sand dune, and then actually turned around and came back, and then later on this day came out in a four-wheeler and did the four-wheeler circuit, and then I came out the next day as I was walking out, and lo and behold, there were some, I assumed to be deer tracks crossing, and here's a deer track right in the middle of my four-wheeler track, or the four-wheeler I was riding on. And it hit me that, okay, we've just had the law of cross-cutting relationships, that the deer came after we were there with the four-wheeler, right? So we can, just from this, do the first level of relative age dating. We have the second level. We can be more precise about it because I made these at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon, and I came back and I took the photo at noon the next day. So I know that somewhere between 4 o'clock Tuesday afternoon and noon Wednesday, the deer came through, right? If we were doing this in geology, this would represent one geologic unit, and can you see the picture that I'm getting to? That first we would establish just the relative order of things, And then if we had an igneous rock that we could age date, i.e. 12 noon on Wednesday, 50 million years ago, we could say, oh, that event was 50 million years ago. The first event we can age date, and it was 200 million years ago, and then we can the second date has to be somewhere between 50 and 200 million years ago, right? Relative order first, and then whatever precision we can add to it, we try to. The law of original horizontality, I see some beds here. I assume those were laid down flat. The law of cross-cutting relationships, here's the most predominant bed that I see right here, and all of a sudden bloody ends, right? I think there's a fault that runs right through there and that has somehow truncated that bed. And in the best of conditions, we find that bed somewhere on the other side of the fault and measure that distance and now can try to figure out what the motion on that fault has been. We can't do that here. This is somewhere close by. Same thing we see. I assume these were originally laid down horizontally. And what in the heck's going on here? The bed ends. We don't think that's a normal. We assume that that bed would be laterally continuous. And so I think there's a series of faults right there that cut that bed. And because they cut the bed, they're younger.
Now, could that come from ice, from expansion, contraction, or a fault like that? Or
let me think about
water
that.
Running down, or?
I see it as being more a physical disruption of the rock. This was on a trip I took to Banff this summer. I was focused on geology and golf and the two in various. And this is on the road going down to the Banff Springs golf course. And as I was going by it at about 20 miles an hour, because that's how fast you can drive, I went, holy cow, there's an unconformity there. I got to take a photo of that. Well, I was at the golf course three more times and waited until the last minute and on the way out got that. And as I was there, I thought, wait a minute, I don't think that's an unconformity at all. As it turns out, that rock unit right there turns. And so what that is a fold where here this stuff is relatively flat, you know, kind of at this angle out to all of us. And then it turns so hard that now the bedding layers, this is a bedding plane or a bedding layer, and now it turns and comes out horizontally. That fold has to have been, I mean, in reality, you know, in cross-section, that thing is more than 90 degrees. So I was misconfused for 3 days. Here are the Rocky Mountains near Banff, Canada. 4 years ago when I was there, I would have said limestone, sandstone, and shale, and then limestone on top. After Marion badgering me for years, my first thought is, that's pretty spectacular, isn't it? And it's also made of limestone, sandstone, shale, and limestone. And we know this, the limestone is denser and more competent and therefore can form these vertical faces. The sandstone and shale aren't as tough, so they have a tendency to form the slopes, and then you find more limestone. So you can do arm waving level geology from quite a distance away just by looking at that difference. And that pattern is repeated many places in the Banff area, including the around the golf course.